Welcome to the Duluth Vineyard Podcast. This message is recorded from one of our weekend services. As a church, we are a community from all different walks of life who are learning to love God and love one another. We're a place where everyone is welcome, true believers, along with the curious, the skeptical, the wounded, and even the disillusioned. We're a place of new hope and second chances. We're a church where God can be found. You can find out more about the Vineyard Church in Duluth on our website at duluthvineyard.org. Thanks for listening.
Well, good morning. I was anticipating we were going to do a child dedication, so I was just hanging out. It's like, and Chris is coming up. I am. Well, good morning. My name's Chris Sauter. My wife, Nikki, and I, we are some of the staff people here at the Vineyard. And I want to start by saying I really love being a part of this community, being a part of this family. And so I want to thank you for letting us be a part of it. And I love being able just to share my story, share what I feel like God's doing in my life, and some of the things that I hope as a community that we can really learn how to do together. So I just want to say thank you for letting me share. So what we are talking about tonight is we're continuing our series called Love God, Love People, where this is really what we're all about and we want to learn how to do. But I want to break it down a little bit more and talk about this thing called a vocation. And what does vocation mean? What does vocation look like? But where I want to start is by a guy named Parker Palmer. It's a great name, Parker Palmer. So you could say it 10 times fast and impress people. So Parker Palmer is an activist for education and an author, and this is what he writes. Let your life speak. Before you tell your life what you intend to do with it, listen for what it intends to do with you. Let your life speak. I love that. Because I really feel like a lot of us have this question a lot. Like when I read that, it flips a switch inside of me of, does what I do matter? Does my life actually have a purpose? What I do with my time, what I do with my energy, what I do with my money, is it like relevant to anything outside of just me? Can I really have an impact in this like story of life? Does like Chris Sauter, like does he have a role? Right? Does Mark Niergarten have a role in the story of what's happening in this world? Does Mike Wilson have a role? And I believe that we do. I believe that we have a specific purpose. So what a lot of people do is they think, well, I want to have impact because I feel like we crave to be relevant in our culture, in our community. We want to let our life speak. So what a lot of people do is they say, well, then this is how you have an impact the community, so I will do this. And we choose, I'm going to do this because it will have an impact. But is there a way of, what we love and what we're created to do? Can that speak as well? Is there only, these kind of jobs or these kind of things we can do that can only have an impact? Or can we be who God created us to be and have a similar impact? And I believe we can. And what we call that is vocation. So let's define vocation so we can all get on the same page. As a student of Jesus, as a follower of God, in the broad sense, vocation simply means love God, love people. Imagine that, right? That's what we've been talking about. And that's what we're called to do, love God with our whole heart, our mind, our body, our soul. And we're called to love people, love our neighbors as we love ourselves. As a follower of Jesus, that is what our vocation is. But what does that mean for Chris Sauter? What does that mean for you specifically? And I believe the way we're going to define it and how we're going to use it in the context of this morning is a vocation for us means that you have a special assignment that only you can do. That you have a role in this story of the kingdom of God and the story of Duluth and the story of your family and the story of your campus. That you are the only actor. No one else is trying out for that part. You've already locked down that role, and only you can play it. So, for example, a vocation, and let me say this, a vocation isn't just necessarily tied to what you get paid to do. It can be. How you let your life speak can be what you do for a living, but it's not necessarily tied to that. So, let's say you work at Starbucks, and you think, well, Chris, you're telling me I'm the only person who can actually pour a cup of coffee, and let me tell you that. I've had a lot of bad cups of coffee, and so if you're actually good at it, all right, you're going to see this moneymaker face a lot, all right? You're going to get a lot of hair in your coffee. So, but I believe that, is it the only role you can play? Are you the only one who can do that? Well, the way that you, look people in the eye, Because you have no idea where these people are coming from. You have no idea where these people are going. They could be walking into a boardroom where they're just going to get ripped apart. They might be walking into a home where they have these hidden expectations laid on them. They're going to be going into a classroom. They feel like they're a failure. You have no idea where they're coming, where they're going. But the way that you treat them, when you look in the eye, ask how they're doing, remember their name, your life can speak to them as you play this role as working in coffee. The way you treat, like, your quality of your product, the way you treat your employees can really have an impact on the people around you. That role, you can only play. Well, let's take another example. What about, like, being a wife or being a husband? That's a vocation as well. You can only be that person for your spouse. And so the way that you treat her, the way that you respect one another, the way you talk about your husband, the way you talk about your wife, you know, when you're at work or out in public, how you spend your money and the way you communicate, that, the way you express your sexuality in marriage, that, like, all of it can express and can point to and let your life speak about this kingdom of God. We have a specific role to play. And what we're going to be looking at is this young woman named Mary. And maybe you know Mary. She's the Virgin Mary, the Mother Mary, the Mary Mary, the Good Mary, all right? We're going to be looking at her life and look at what her vocation is and how did that impact not only her but the people around her. So the journey I want to lead us through is, first, I want to look at, like, what are some of the lies? What are some of the things that we can discredit, that Mary could even discredit herself saying, I can't play that special assignment. I can't be this role. Because there's a lot of lies that we buy into that we take ourselves out. And then I want to look at, can our vocation, can our story really impact the people around us? Or is it just, like, only impacting me? Am I the only one benefiting from it? And then thirdly, where I want to end up, and this is a big one, is then how do we actually come in touch? How do we get in touch with a vocation? How do we find out what we're for? Is it even possible? And I believe that it is. So I'm going to pray, and then we'll look at the Bible. So Jesus, I absolutely do love you. And I want my life to speak. But man, to be honest, I just feel like my life too often just speaks about me. Speaks about my past, speaks about my story. And Jesus, I want to be a part of your story because you have the best story of all. So I ask, as we begin to dialogue about our vocation, about our special assignment, the roles we can play, I pray you'd come close and begin to show us how we can be a part of your story and really let our life speak. In your name, amen. So we're going to be reading out of Luke chapter 1, verses 46 through 55. And there's a Bible underneath your chair if you want to grab it. And we're on page 701. As you're getting there, I'm going to give you a little background to let you in on where we're at. So here Mary is about 12 to 13 years old. She is engaged to a guy named Joseph. And at this time, she is pregnant. All right? What were you doing when you were 12? I think about that. I was, like, still learning how to tie my shoes. I was trying to, like, not bring G.I. Joe and Snake Eyes into conversations with girls, all right? You know, girls are like, did you see Storm Shadow? He's so cool, right? Girls don't like that, apparently. Like, she's 12, and she's engaged to be married and is already pregnant. Now, it wasn't uncommon at this time for girls to be engaged to be married, but still, 12 is young. 12 or 13 years old is really young. And what we're going to read is a song, all right? Now, my father-in-law is here. He's right over in the corner. He does not like being pointed out. When he hears that there's going to be singing, he calls it death by music, all right? So I'm not going to be singing. Don't worry, all right? We're not going to get up and have background dances. But she is singing a song, and I believe that this is appropriate because what do 12 or 13-year-old girls do? Even though, like, what do, like, a lot of women do? They sing. Right? A lot. I'll be walking through the lobby and there'll be some girls out there and sometimes they'll sing songs, but then they talk sing. They're like, how you doing, girl? I'm doing awesome. Your hair's looking fine. And I just keep walking, all right? They sing a lot. Yeah, I did sing. Sorry, Dick, all right? I can sing pretty good. Thank you very much. But why is Mary singing? Here's why Mary is singing. Mary is singing because God has noticed her. It's her response from God paying attention to someone like Mary. And so she's just simply responding to what God's already done in her life. So let's start here. Mary said in verse 46, "My soul glorifies the Lord, and my spirit rejoices in God my Savior, for he has been mindful of the humble state of his servant. From now on, all generations will call me blessed, for the Mighty One has done great things for me. Holy is his name. His mercy extends to those who fear him from generation to generation. He has performed mighty deeds with his arm. He has scattered those who are proud in their innermost thoughts. He has brought down the rulers from their thrones, but has lifted up the humble. He has filled the hungry with good things, but has sent the rich away empty. He has helped his servant Israel, remembering to be merciful to Abraham and his descendants forever, just as he promised our ancestors. For he has been mindful of the humble state of his servant." So where we're starting is that when we press into our vocation, as we begin to respond to this special assignment, this role God has for us, God wraps up our past. He wraps up our story into his story. You see, Mary starts by saying he has been mindful of his humble state. He's been mindful. God noticed Mary. And this is like a song of worship. This is a song of thanksgiving. Do you know how good it feels to be noticed? Do you remember you were like a little kid and like you'd bring home your art project and your mom would say, "Wow, you are really good." And you puff your chest up and be like, "Yeah, I can paper mache with the best of them," right? And then you know, you might be like throwing baseball and your dad say, "Wow, you got a rocket arm." And you say, yeah, I do, right? And then when girls start noticing you, guys start noticing you, and they start talking, you just feels good. It just feels so good to be noticed. Have you ever been noticed by God? Have you ever felt that? Just that attention, that it's just like face to face with Jesus, and he's just telling you, "I am in love with you, and I notice you." That's the best feeling in the whole world. And Mary is just responding out of that. "I have been noticed. You have been mindful of me." And this is important, that we can actually be noticed by God, but then we can give it back to him saying, "Thank you, because I notice you as well, and I'm in love with you." And that's what Mary's doing. But what is her humble state? What is her humble state? Well, it's obvious. She's pregnant, right? She's pregnant, and she is not married. In this time, there's a lot of guilt and shame if, you know, you're sleeping around, or especially if you're pregnant and you're not married. I can just imagine, all right, around the well, because they didn't have water coolers then, right? So they're hanging around the well, and they're like, "Susie, did you see Mary? She's a little bit bigger. I don't know, Julie. Did you get an invitation to the wedding? I didn't. It must have got lost in the mail. Apparently, someone jumped the gun. People are going to start talking, right? We see that Mary has a reputation. Mary has a reputation. Now, the label is not correct. She wasn't an adulterer, right? That she, God, an angel came and said that this is going to be God's baby. And you're going to give birth to the Messiah, and you should call him Jesus, right? She wasn't sleeping with Joseph. But she can't control what people think of her. She can't control their perception of her. She can run up to, you know, Julie and Susie and be like, no, this is God's baby. He's a Messiah. You know, she can't run up to everyone and like, "Touch it, it's Jesus." All right? She can't control how they perceive her. But she says, "You've been mindful of the humble state," and she's saying, "God, thank you for noticing my state." You see, I got to thinking about this. Like, adultery can have a big impact on people perceive us and what we want to do in our vocation. That can have a huge impact. Think about recently something in the media. We have Tiger Woods. Tiger Woods is probably the most famous and recognizable athlete of today. It'd be like Michael Jordan of my generation, and for Michael Gatlin, our senior pastor, that'd be like Babe Ruth for him, all right? Oh, I love that one. All right. So Tiger Woods is the most famous athlete right now. And, you know, he cheated on his wife and he got caught. And that has affected his family a lot. And I'm not taking away from that. They're working through that, and it has a huge impact on his perception of his wife and his kids. Right? I'm not making light of that. But think about how his reputation has affected, let's just say, PGA, the professional sport of golf. Ratings are down because he's not in it. People aren't showing up. They're not watching TV. Other golfers are complaining about it. It has, one man's reputation is affecting an entire professional sport. One man. And then his sponsors, people who pay Tiger to endorse his products, they did research, and billions upon billions of dollars have been lost because of one man's reputation. Right? Tiger Woods hits a ball a long way. Puts a little ball in a little hole very well. Right? I'm talking like a caveman. Mary is going to give birth to the Son of God. That's a little bit bigger deal than a little ball, right? There's a little bit more pressure. She had to be thinking, this reputation, the way these people perceive my son, they're going to say, isn't that Jesus? Is that Mary's boy? Oh, yeah, he's one of those. She knew that her reputation could impact the life of Jesus, but here's what she did differently. She said, thank you to God that you have paid attention to me. She trusted that what God had was better. She can't control her reputation, but she knew this vocation, this role that she was called to play was the best story. The best. So Mary has a reputation. The second thing we see is Mary has a specific past that affects her vocation. We see that Mary is very poor. She comes from a very poor family. And just one example, and there's lots, but one example is when Jesus is born, her and Joseph, her husband, they go to the temple to dedicate this child, and it says that they used two birds. They sacrificed two birds to dedicate Jesus. Well, if you look at the Torah, which is like the first five books of the Bible, the Old Testament, it spells out what are you supposed to do to dedicate your child, and it says to sacrifice a lamb. But if you can't afford it, so if you're poor, you can't afford the lamb, we'll then bring two birds. And what God is doing is he's making it accessible for more people to come and experience him. But it really clearly defines that if you do this, well, you're just not as well off as someone who can have a lamb. So Mary has poor, and I just think about this. She had to be thinking that this Jesus is going to be a big deal, the biggest deal, the King of Kings, right? And she's like, I have nothing to offer him. I can give birth to him, but what else how am I going to set him up for success? I already have this reputation. I have nothing to offer him. I don't have these things to make life so easy for him. So she has a past and she has a reputation. But here's the thing. God wasn't asking Mary to be anyone else but Mary. He was not asking her to be anything else but who she was at that time when God says, I have a vocation, I have a job, I have a role specifically for you. It wasn't like God was up in heaven, like flipping pancakes, and he was talking to his buddy Gabriel, the angel, said, all right, go talk to Mary and tell her she's going to give birth, you know, to Jesus. And he turns around, and then Gabriel goes and finds Mary, starts talking to her and says, you're going to conceive a son, he shall be named Jesus. And God all of a sudden, like, snaps in attention and goes, no, wrong Mary. Oh, this isn't good. What are we going to do? What am I going to do, all right? Because she's got a reputation, because she's not married. Well, maybe we can like speed up the whole wedding thing and, you know, get married before she shows, because that would really help Jesus later on. You know what? She's poor. Ooh, that's going to be a tough one. Maybe I'll start a Caribou Coffee and she get a part-time job. That would really help things out. Like, God wasn't saying, oh my me, what am I going to do? Right? God knew exactly who she was and her humble state, and he called her still, saying, this is the role I have for you specifically. See, God isn't asking you to be anyone different but who you are. Let me say it again. He's not asking you, Chewy, to be anyone different but who you are right now. You know, let's speed up. Let's say you're at the end and you're in heaven, you're face to face with God. God isn't going to say, how come you weren't more like Moses? I thought I made it pretty clear. Having a big beard and a staff was like pretty cool, right? But how come you weren't more like Brenda Gatlin? Man, she could pray for people, and she's really good. How come you weren't like her? How come you weren't more like your sister? You ever been compared to your sister or your sibling before? How come you weren't more like your brother? Man, your brother was a great athlete, and he really, really was nice to people. You, What God's going to say face-to-face is saying, were you the you I made you to be? Were you the you that I made you to be? This role I had for you, this role I created for you, did you play that out? How did that go? He's not asking you to be anyone different but who you are. Now it's true, our past and our reputation can affect who we can be. But here's the deal. When you surrender your life to Jesus and you say, I want to be a part of who you are, God takes our story, wraps it up, and puts it in the best story, and that's his story. And like our reputation, the things we've done, those lies, those hurt, those addictions, the guilt, the shame, they don't get to tell me who I am anymore. They don't get to dictate who Chris Sauter is anymore, because that has been wrapped up, and now it's based on who God is and who he says I am. And who he says I am is pretty good. And we're telling the best story in the world. And our life can speak the best story in the world. There's a guy by the name of Scott McKnight, and he writes this in a book called The Jesus Creed. He says, we too were raised to a vocation with the wounds of our past intact, visible and a witness to what God can do. Mary knew her own wounds, but knew also that God was about to heal those wounds with a vocation. We have wounds from our past. But as we begin to press in to this role God has called us to play, there is healing. There is acceptance. There's love. There's wholeness. There's real hope that we can experience today. So God swallows up our past. The next thing we see from Mary is that our vocation should leave a mark. Our vocation should have an impact on the people around us. Yes, that as we press into our vocation, there is things for us. We do get acceptance and love and healing, like I just said. But it has to go beyond us. So when I start thinking about having like an impact, we should leave a mark. Like, I'm a boy, so I'm a man. That sounds a lot better. I'm a boy. I'm a man. You know, so I think of like physical things that usually can hurt myself. So like, when I think of having a mark, I think of when I was a boy and we'd have those big red bats, you know, those big plastic bats, and we'd get bored and we'd think, hey, let's just hit each other with these. And so, you know, like you're hitting each other, you're running around, hitting each other in the leg, and it like leaves like big bruises on your leg that you can show, like, look at this one. I believe that our vocation, our role should have, leave a mark on the people around us. Now, I'm not telling you if you own a business to go in tomorrow with a bat and start hitting your employees like, I'm leaving a mark. Yay! That's not what I'm saying. But I really feel that our life should speak in a way that impacts our homes, impacts our families. It should impact, like, in our dorm room. It should impact our businesses where we volunteer. There should be an impact of this story, of this vocation, of this role God has asked us to play. And we see from Mary, specifically, just in this little song, we see that what Mary sings about comes up again and again and again and again in the life of Jesus, in the ministry of Jesus. So, for example, Mary sings about in this song about how God's name is holy and about how he's going to feed people. He's going to feed the hungry. Jesus, when he's teaching his disciples how to pray, he starts with saying, hallowed be thy name, that your name is different, your name is set apart, your name is great. And then he goes on to say, give us this day our daily bread, that God can meet our everyday needs. That God just doesn't notice our needs, but God can meet our everyday needs. So Mary sings about it, and Jesus spends a lot of his time just feeding people. Wherever he goes, people are eating, right? So Jesus doesn't just notice needs, he has practical and can meet those needs. And then we see that she sings a lot about having mercy and compassion, that God has mercy and compassion. And Jesus, this is what Jesus was. He was mercy and he was compassion. You know that Jesus' life, his ministry was like pretty much just one big interruption? It was pretty much one big interruption. Wherever he went, people are throwing themselves from ceilings. People are grabbing him in crowds, grabbing his robe. They're yelling his name. They're throwing themselves in front of him. They're trying to get his attention. Wherever he went, people were interrupting him. Like, how do we handle interruption? All right, think about this. You're on the phone. And, like, I'm on my phone with my friend, and we're, like, Brett Favre this, Brett Favre that, right? And we're talking. All of a sudden, my son, Cole, you know, comes in, and he's saying, why is Iron Man red, all right? And he's trying to get my attention, or your roommate is trying to get your attention, or your employee walks in, and is like, do you have the 403 memo from last week? And you're on the phone, what do? Do you say, oh, yes, I have mercy and compassion? What you're doing, this is exactly what you do, right? So you just start like miming out like threats. You're like, oh yeah, I'm still here. Yeah, yeah. It's like you're mimicking a fire-breathing dragon to try to. It's like we don't like to be interrupted. Mercy and compassion doesn't come naturally to us. But this is who Jesus was, and this is what Mary's singing about. Mary also spends a lot of time singing about how the humble shall be raised up and the proud shall be like come off the thrones. There's a leveling of the playing field. And Jesus does this as well. He just doesn't talk and notice people, but he also like opposes any authority, any religious leader who's trying to oppress the poor. We see Jesus around a table having a meal and with these religious leaders, and all of a sudden this prostitute walks in and wants to give Jesus this gift of perfume. And one of the religious leaders stands up and goes, whoa, 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 whoa. Don't you know who we are? More importantly, don't you know who you are? People like you don't come around people like us. He makes it us versus them. What Jesus does, he says, no, 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 no. Apparently you don't know who I am because she's been here the whole time. She's been worshiping me. This is what love is. So you can sit down. Jesus again and again challenges the authority of people who are trying to oppress the poor. So in one song, we see a lot of Jesus' ministry. There's more examples. But think about this. I don't think that the two, all right, are just a coincidence. I believe that Mary taught her son Jesus. I believe Mary included Jesus and shared life with him. Her vocation wasn't just giving birth to Jesus and saying, all right, go be the son of God, go get him, all right? She taught him what it looks like to be a man of God. She taught him what it looks like to notice the poor. She taught him how do you actually like meet the needs of people in practical ways that speaks to them. How do we notice people? Like, what does it really mean to be humble? How can we come in touch with this? Why is it important? I believe Mary shared life with Jesus, and I believe that had a huge impact on who he was. It just wasn't that he was the Son of God, and he just, like, got it. I believe a lot of it was intentionally learned from spending time sharing life with Mary, and that was her vocation. Not just birthing, but being a mom. And I believe this is how we are to let our life speak, to let people in on our lives, let them see what we do, what we love, and how we do it. So let's get practical for a little bit. Parents. There's probably a lot of parents in here. And if you're not a parent, maybe you have like a nephew, or your friend has a kid, or maybe like you're a mentor. Like, think about this. Do you just share like a space with people? Like as families, do we just share a space? Do we just share a meal? Do we just share time once in a while? Or are we sharing life? Because there's a big difference from sharing space to sharing life. So like an example could be like you play softball. Maybe you love playing softball. Sharing life would be like bringing your kids along and letting your kids see what does it look like to have healthy relationships from a man to a man. How do you treat your friends? Like how do you talk? How do you pay attention to them? How do you really love and serve one another? What does it look like to have fun? What does it look like for mom and dad to enjoy themselves? So just keeping away, what does it look like to have fun together? That's like a practical way of like sharing life. For me, my example of how I learned how to do what I do, a big part is because of my father, my dad, Denny Sauter. And he was an English teacher at Carleton for 30 plus years. And the thing he did every single year was he put on the world-renowned Carleton musicals. All right? That was a joke, all right? He put on a musical at Carleton. I know what you're thinking. Carleton, 800 people, a bunch of farm kids, farm boys, farm girls. We're not really known from getting up and, you know, New York, New York, right? That doesn't scream classy. But my dad put on these musicals. He could have just done plays that have been short, have two lines, walk in, wave, walk out. But what my dad wanted to do was to create a place where kids can come and experience art and culture in a way they never have before. And I remember my dad telling me, or I heard him overhear him talking to someone, he said, you know, where else are they going to be able to go and learn how to do this? Where else are they going to have like a realistic chance to get up and sing and stretch themselves and go beyond their comfort zone? Because you know what? They're going to go, and when they graduate, they might go to college, they might just go back to the farm, and they're probably never going to have an opportunity to do this again. So my dad didn't care that they couldn't sing. My dad didn't care that they couldn't act. It was about teaching kids a life lesson of that you just don't have to play with the cards that were dealt with you. There is more out there for you. And my dad would bring me and my brothers and sisters, and we'd sit there with our sun-kissed orange sodas in the glass bottle, right? And we'd sit there and we'd watch my dad as he got up on stage and he would teach people how to stand and how to project their voice, how to deliver the really highbrow comedy, right? How to sing, even though out of key, how can you still deliver it that will capture an audience? And I watched that and I was thinking, that's what I want to do. And it is what I do. In this room right across the hallway, my wife Nikki and I, with a team of about 30 adults, we lead hundreds and hundreds of students. And because of my dad taking time to share life with me and let me see how he did it, we are doing the same thing in there. And the stage is the kids' lives. And me and my leaders, we're in there trying to teach kids, like, how do you really, like, love your parents when you feel like they don't love you? Like, how do you really just, like, be different in your school without just being that weird Christian? How can you really stand up for what is really true? How can you express your body and what you do with it just absolutely different so people actually really want to follow you? What does that look like to be intimate with Jesus than just with your girlfriend or your boyfriend? I'm trying to teach kids that the cards that they're dealt with isn't what they have to play with, that there's more for them. And my dad taught me that. He didn't sit down and say, here's how you do it, Chris. He just let me watch. He shared life with me. And it had a huge impact on who I am. Like, what would it look like for us? Like, as we go out and we do our vocation, we do our role, that we can let people see our lives, that we can be exposed rather than pulling back and just sheltering, like, I'm just going to do it and get it done. That will have a lasting impact on your kids, on your friends, at your workplace, at the YMCA, on the road. It can have an impact that can ultimately change people's lives. And your life can speak the story of the kingdom of God, that there is more for you than what you're dealt with right now. Your story, your role, your specific assignment can impact drastically the people around you. So, as we press in our vocation, God wraps up our story, our past, and our reputation, and we see that our vocation is meant to have an impact and leave a mark on the people around us. So then how do we actually, like, do this? How do we actually come in contact with our vocation? And here's where I want to start. You have to start by making yourself available to God. And I know, maybe that sounds pretty easy, like, oh, all right, I'm here, God, I'm available. It's a lot harder than it sounds. Because to make yourself available takes an incredible amount of humility. Because this is what you're doing. You're taking the director chair. You have the story of Chris, and I am the director. And making yourself available to God is getting off the director chair and giving and saying, all right, God, this is yours now. You get to lead this story. You get to tell me, enter stage left, enter stage right. You tell me what scene we're in. You tell me how to live this life. You get to call the shots. And that takes a lot of humility. And we see Mary, right? Like, she's pregnant, visibly pregnant, and it's out of control, but yet she still trusts that what God has is the best, that his better is better than my better. That takes a lot of humility. But this is where we have to start. In our vocation, in our role, we have to start by saying, God, you get to be in charge. So an example that I love is with money. And in our life, we have like a big check. We have this big check. And what we like to do is we like to write it out and says, Chris's life to Jesus. Rip. Here you go. Even Stephen God, now go get humanity. Good luck with that. All right? And then we think, all right, we're good. We're square. Well, God just doesn't take that and deposit it and let us just go do what we want to do. God takes it and cashes it, that big check, and he cashes it for a bunch of pennies, nickels, dimes, and quarters. And he puts them in his pocket. In our life, right, we're just changed in God's pocket. And he gets to spend us any way he wants. That's what it looks like to be available to God. He gets to spend you any way he wants, not just one lump sum. But when maybe you're here and you have a neighbor and they lost their job, And maybe you're good with your hands, and you can like kind of fix cars, and you feel like God's saying, you know what, the car's not running so well, and you know they're going to be taking their kids daycare, but they really can't afford it, and they have to go look for a job. So why don't you go over there and like give them oil change? It'll take you 20 minutes. Can you tune up their belt a little bit? That's like, God, here, that's a dime. Or you're at your workplace, and you heard from a friend of a friend, there's that lady who her husband left her. And you feel like God's saying, just go there and tell her that I notice her, that I'm mindful of her, and that I love her. That's a quarter. Also, you feel like you're supposed to call up like your niece, your nephew, or your cousin, or your aunt, and just tell them, hey, can we get together and have some coffee? I want to hear your story again. I want to know how you're doing. That's like a dime. Every day, God gets to choose how we are spent. And this is where we have to start as a vocation, is saying, God, who do you say that I am, and what do you want to do with me? How do you want my life to speak? That's where we start. The next place we go to, I really believe, is we have to be involved in community. You have to allow people in your life. You have to be willing to be exposed. A practical example of that here at the Vineyard is small groups. We can't share, like right here, we can't really share life. You can't share life by looking at the back of the person's head and saying, well, they got a lot of dandruff, right? That's not sharing life, right? That's just silent judgment. But I believe in order to have this vocation, we have to be willing to be exposed. And in a small group, you can hear people's story. You can share your story. You can eat people's food for free. You can sit on their couch. You can learn how to pray for one another. You can learn how to like live this life together. Like, what does the Bible have to say about me as a Chris Sauter? This whole singing and worship thing, this doesn't make sense. Like, in small group, you can learn how to do these so that when you feel like God does speak to you, you feel like God says, I have this role for you, you can go to these people and say, I have no idea what I'm doing. Will you pray for me? Will you be this community for me? Small group to me is like a playground. It's a place where when you feel like God's calling you to something, you can go out and like actually do it in a safe place where people are for you and they love you and they want the best for you. That's small group. Third thing, so we have to make ourselves available, that we're changing God's pocket. We have to be involved in community to be real, like a small group. And lastly, we just have to start somewhere. And this is a big key. Because a lot of times what we want to do is we just want to like hang back and say, all right, I got to have this special role, and will you just wheel it out in front of me? And we just kind of sit and saying, all right, make it happen. But a lot of times I believe that God is wanting like our will, that we're at least going to go try starting and do something. So that could be like getting in the trenches of like the greeting team, those nice people that you saw walking in. Like, just make yourself available in serving other people. Like, rub shoulders with people, and as you learn how to, like, shake people's hands in not, like, an awkward way, like, do I hug, you look people in the eye, you engage them in conversation, and you just, like, make them feel welcome. As you do this and you start serving other people, I really believe that it will wake something inside of us that says, I really like this. I feel like my life can really speak as I serve other people. It could be downstairs working with, like, the three-year-olds, right? But it doesn't just have to be here. There's, at the Vineyard, there's thousands of places in Duluth where you can get involved. It could be like coaching your daughter's swimming team. It could be becoming a mentor like at the YMCA. It could be going out to like the nursing homes and playing bingo with people and just singing songs with them and looking at birds. Where it starts is that we have to be willing just to be spent. We have to be willing just to go serve other people. As you do that, as you engage in that, I believe you will find out what you're for. And we did, this is interesting, we did a study here at the Vineyard, or a survey, and a third of the people took the survey, so that would be like this whole side, said that they wanted to be involved, they wanted to get plugged in, but weren't serving yet. So there's a lot of us here where we're craving that, we want that, we want to be able to use and let our roles play, let our lives speak. There's opportunities for us to do it, but what we have to do is do it. We have to start, take a risk. A lot of this is just taking a risk to be used by God, taking a risk by letting your life, like let people in on your life, and then taking a risk of actually doing it is a big risk. So this is where I end. Here's what I say to you. Like Mary, I want to be able to take a risk. Like Mary, I want God to notice me in the midst of my humble state, in the midst of like my visible wounds and my past and my scars. I want my story to scream the story of the kingdom of God. And not just for me, not just for you specifically, but my life will speak and impact the people in this community. And that Duluth, people would be known for the way that we love God in practical ways, the way that we love people. And our stories are shouting that. That's why I want us as a family, as a community, that our roles, our special assignments would speak. So I invite you to stand. So I really believe that God loves us. I believe that God just doesn't love us, but he wants to be involved in our everyday life, and that he wants to speak to us. He just doesn't want to talk at us. He wants to give us, empower us with his spirit so that we can actually do the things that we can actually do this role he's calling us to do. And one way we do that, one way we can try like experiencing God is through prayer. So I'm going to invite the ministry team to make their way up, and who these people are, in case you just don't know them. These are people who are trained how to pray, which means they're just trained how to talk to God in really relational, everyday, non-weird ways, all right? And these are people who are for you. They might not know you, but I can guarantee they are for you. They are for your vocation. They are for your marriages. They are for your family. They're for you, and they want the best for you. And that's who these people are. So here's my invitation. And again, here's another risk. I'm going to be inviting you to make your way up here in a little bit. And this is another risk of like, I have to come up in front of like 800 people. Whoa, 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 whoa. But I really believe that God is speaking to some of you even right now. And here's what I'm going to ask for you to respond to. I'm going to pray a little bit. And when I'm done praying, the music will start up and you guys can come up at any time. And here's the two things. First thing is this. Maybe you're here and you feel like you've never made yourself available to God. Maybe you've never said, all right, here's the change, here's the check, spend me however you want. And that's something that you crave. You're thinking, I want that. I'm sick of my same old story. I'm sick of me being the director. God, I want you to be the boss. I want you to be the king. I want you to be the director. The people up here can walk you through what it looks like to say yes to Jesus, to make yourself available to him. They love to walk you through that. And here's the second thing. Maybe you're here and you think, Chris, my job, my role, my special assignment, maybe as a parent, as an employee, as a boss, as a college student, as a husband or wife, you think, I'm sick of it. My story is it's just lame. My story, I can't win. My kids are walking all over me. My husband, I don't know what he's up to. My job, I just hate it. I don't want to get up in the morning. And you just feel like I'm done. And you feel like you've just given up. What I feel like God is saying to you is I have something real for you. That role for you, is no one else can play that. It's still just for you. And I want to breathe life into you. I want to empower you to continue to be the you I created you to be. So instead of laying down and dying, I feel like God is saying, get up, because I'm right with you. I'm doing this life with you. We're doing it together. If that hits home with you, and you, even like right now, you feel like your heart's jumping, saying, I want that. I'm going to pray, and these people up here, they would love to pray with you. And if you want prayer for anything else in life, please come up. So Holy Spirit, I invite you to come. And Jesus, we want to be empowered by you. We want to live life with you. And I just start, for those of you who feel like we have laid down, we feel like giving up. We feel like this story is just out of control. I can't handle anymore. Jesus, I pray you'd come and will you revive us, speak life into us. And we want to say yes to you, Jesus, that you have the best thing for us, that your story is absolutely the best. And you are mindful of my humble state. You're aware of our lives. So Jesus, will you come? And for those of us, God, who just are feeling, I don't want to be available. I have fear of being available to you. Can I really trust that you are who you say you are? God, I pray you'd come quick and meet us right where we're at. So thank you for coming to the Vineyard. If there's anything we can pray for you about, these people here would love to pray for you. Have a great day.